This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. If you're trying to succeed at love, why is improved communication not the right place to start? What do you do if commitment scares you? How can a tandem bicycle race redefine your relationship? Two psychologists answer all these questions and much more in their new book, Lifelong Love. But it's not just any advice book. These two therapists, who happen to be married to each other, have devised a unique strategy that involves bringing a third partner into successful relationships. Sort of. We asked Drs. Peter Sherris and Phyllis Koch-Sherris to explain all this and solicit your ideas for making love work too, right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The book is titled Lifelong Love. Its subtitle, Four Steps to Creating and Maintaining an Extraordinary Relationship. The book's co-authors are both clinical psychologists and married to each other, Dr. Phyllis Koch-Sherris and Dr. Peter Sherris. Thank you both for making time for us.
Thanks for having us.
Well, to you who are listening, if you have any questions about making a love relationship work, our phone lines are open at 888-WMRA-TALK. Or maybe you have theories of your own about what keeps relationships from working, or a story you'd be willing to tell about your own experience. 888-967-2825, if you are willing to share. But Phyllis and Peter, since you have written this new book as a married couple, it seems only fair to begin by asking you some about your relationship. Like, how long have you been together? How'd you meet? How did you know it was love?
Well, two easy questions and a hard one.
Yeah, right. We've been together about 37 years and married 35. Isn't that right, Peter?
Yep.
Sometimes I get the year wrong. And we met when we were both doing our clinical psychology internships. And the first day that we were there for orientation, I sat down at this table, and sitting right across from me was this really cute guy. And that was Peter. And if I had any doubts about whether or not I wanted to stay in that particular internship, they went away as soon as I saw him. It was kind of like the romantic notion of love at first sight. It took us a while before we actually went on our first date because there were also, I think, 22 other guys in that
many
internship
of them attractive,
class,
I might add.
And I was recently divorced and looking for a good time. So we did finally go out. I think at the intern's Christmas party was kind of our first get together. And we went out for a few months, and it was shortly after that that Peter took a job at the University of Virginia and asked me to come with him. That was kind of a big leap.
Because you said no at the start.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Palo Alto, California, and I was loving it. So
it's interesting to hear you talk about it that way. My experience was somewhat different. I didn't have that love at first sight experience. My experience was after we had been going out for a while together to begin to imagine what it was that I was looking for in a partner. And I remember Phyllis walking into the cafeteria at the hospital where we were working and my just having this fleeting thought that that was my wife. So I just sort of did a little internal role play. It's like, oh, there's Phyllis, comma, my wife. And it was very interesting. My own internal response to that was, wow, that was a kind of a calming experience. So I think Phyllis got stimulated and I got calmed down. And that allowed us to really continue our relationship.
Peter, I don't know if you know this, but you actually taught me something as a talk show host the first time that you were here many years ago. I don't think Phyllis was with you this particular instance, but we were talking about a book that you had written several years ago. several years before the interview, and I asked you a question about something that was in it, and you gave me this blank look, like, how could you possibly expect me to remember everything in a book that I'd written several years ago? So I don't want to do that to you again, even though this is just out, this new book that the two of you wrote together, Peter Scherers and Phyllis Kotscheris. So I am going to read to you from an early page in the introduction to this book, and then ask both of you about it, if that's okay. It's interesting the way some of this is written, since you are co-authors and sometimes you talk about your experience. It's almost like a third person is doing this, and then you quote each other. So, quoting page 4, in the discussion of how our relationship blossomed, Peter noted, quote, "About 2 months after we began dating, I noticed that my feelings for Phyllis had become quite strong. When I passed her in the hall at work, I would feel flushed." Phyllis reported, sitting in a colleague's office one day when Peter walked past the open door, she had an intense reaction, which was obvious to her coworker, who asked, "What just happened? Who was that who just walked by?" The attraction between us was palpable, even to others. One day, Peter was sitting in the cafeteria in the hospital where we worked when he saw Phyllis walk in. He imagined what it would be like to say to someone, "That's my wife." In that instance, he saw the possibility of committing to a relationship, and the couple known as Phyllis and Peter was born for him. For the first time, Peter could imagine a future lived as a couple. Phyllis explained, "I saw Peter at the orientation meeting for my new job. I was actually not sure then if I was going to stay in the position, as I had another offer that I was thinking of taking instead. But after I saw Peter, there was no question that I'd remain. It was love at first sight for me, and the attraction I felt was undeniable. Although we didn't begin dating until a few months later, I already started imagining a future with him. Newly divorced, I was thoroughly enjoying dating again, but as time went on, my newfound freedom began to pale in comparison to what I was feeling for Peter. This became especially clear after he had me over for dinner one night. He had me at the clam sauce, but he really sealed the deal when he serenaded me on his guitar after dinner. That was it for those other guys I was dating. Falling in love is the easy part, however. The challenge is how to keep the spark alive." So now that we know, and probably should have asked Peter to bring his guitar with him.
Yeah, really, because he hardly ever plays it anymore.
Tell us more about that being the easy part and the challenge being keeping the spark.
Exactly what Phyllis said just now, which was, he doesn't do that anymore. There are certain things in the beginning that are very exciting and novel and new and interesting, and then you do them over and over and over again, and it's sort of like eating your favorite food every day for 6 months, and after a while it just seems to lose its flavor. So for us, learning how to go to the next step isn't just abandoning romance. In fact, it's enhancing it in a way, but doing something a little bit differently to be together.
Yeah, so it's easy to fall in love. You know, you just fall. But then once you're there, it takes some climbing to keep it balanced and alive and exciting. And it's not all work, but it takes some motivation and cooperation to make that lifelong.
We have this expression, honeymoon period, which describes how this is. And the world, when you're newly married, likes you a lot. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't seem to like you. It throws children at you and job pressures and economic downturns. And all of a sudden, it seems like there's a lot else going on.
So there are what I see as two key elements in the work that you do, both in what you offer in this book, in the therapeutic work that you do with couples counseling, and we'll talk more about some of that in a bit. But the two things, as I see, is one is you in essence have invented this idea of an additional entity that is an important part of relationship, and the other is that you have what you call the four C's. So we'll get to all of that. But let me begin with this question. One of the things that you emphasize early on in this book is that you do not start with improved communication. Communication, you say, plays a part, but it comes later. What's this thing the two of you have about not focusing on communication early on?
Our experience in working with couples over the years is when you ask them, why are you here? What's the problem? They'll say, we don't communicate very well. So we are often trained as therapists or listeners to respond to that and say, let's communicate more clearly. We train people to say exactly what's on their mind, and they very frequently use that to kind of annihilate the other person. You know, it's like, well, I don't know how to tell you this, but for the last 25 years, I found you disgusting, and now finally I'm able to say that. And while communicating and telling the truth is certainly important, in the absence of something else, it really appears as a weapon or an ability to be one up on the other person.
Yeah, so you may feel criticized or blamed because there isn't the sort of foundation of the two of you taking responsibility for your relationship together and looking to create something out of this mess that you both are able to make happen in a way that may even be different from where either of you started. And it's not about finding out what's wrong. It's about finding out what you can create, what's possible.
So you say that there are four C's that are all important in successful relationship, and you place communication third. Tell us about the first and the second.
Yes, so they do need to be in this order. As Peter said, if you start with communication, you may start using communication as a bat to hit each over the head with. But if you start with commitment and what it is as a couple that together you are committed to, then you can live into that. You can have a vision that is out in front of you that you're both working towards together. And we call that commitment what your couple proclamation is about. So we have every couple create a couple proclamation that is unique for their couple. And it's a short statement like a mantra that you say every day, because as soon as you create it, it's going to disappear unless you keep it going constantly. So we can say a little bit about how you can create a couple proclamation.
Before we even get to that, tell me what the second C is.
So the second C is cooperation. Most of us think we're very good at cooperating. And the only reason we don't cooperate is that the people we're cooperating with don't know what they're doing. The fact is, if you look at most relationships, is we're not very good at cooperating. So we take projects on together without any clear idea of who is doing what or what each person's expertise is. We're firm believers that this notion of incompatibility may actually be a good thing because it provides diversity. That if you cooperate, if you form a team, people serve different roles on the team. One basketball player may be a scorer, while the other one might be a rebounder. So you're better off having two different people than two scorers. So you can train yourselves to cooperate by practicing. And when you can practice cooperation, you can begin to have results that you want to have in your life together. And then you're doing those things that you always wanted to do, and they don't stand between you.
That's where the tandem bicycle that you talked about in the intro comes in.
I'm going to ask you more about that in a moment, but for anybody who's just joined us, I want to let you know that the Drs. Phyllis Kotscheris and Peter Scheris are co-founders of Couples Coaching Incorporated, are each past presidents of the Virginia Psychological Association, each have private clinical practices in Charlottesville, and their new book is titled Lifelong Love. Bicycle.
So to have a tandem bicycle where both of you are riding together to make that work, you have different roles. You want to talk about that?
Sure. The one person steers primarily. They're called the pilot. And the other person is in the engine room. They're called the stoker.
And one of the things I love that you mentioned in this book, when you give the example, you talk about being on a tandem bicycle with your partner in a race. And all of a sudden, the whole idea of the fact that you're going to cooperate together is because you have this bigger thing you're trying to achieve, winning the race.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't win if we don't win together.
And that sort of connects to the whole idea that you mentioned just a moment ago, Phyllis Kotscheris, about couple, which really is, as you see it, the additional entity in a relationship, a kind of third partner. And I'm going to ask you to explain that when we get back in just a bit more than 1 minute.
Thank you.
So I'm imagining there's someone listening who's never heard of Burt Bacharach, but that probably would mean that you're very, very young. Well, to you on the other side of your radio, whether you are currently in a loving relationship yourself or not, you've certainly observed the tendencies of others around you. Have you come to any conclusions about what makes relationships work or what doesn't? Things you've learned from friends and family about what to try and what to avoid? Our phone lines are open at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. You can also reach us on Facebook, where we are listed as Virginia Insight. The book we're discussing is titled Lifelong Love, 4 Steps to Creating and Maintaining an Extraordinary Relationship. Its co-authors, psychologist Phyllis Kotscheris and Peter Scheris, are our guests. Phyllis, maybe we should go to you first to talk about this mystery entity called couple. Want to explain?
Well, when you said in the introduction that there was a third partner, this is the third entity, which we call couple. And we say couple with a capital C, not a couple or the couple, but couple. Not like it's a thing, but it's something that's so valuable that it's a way that we are, a way of being that is the vision for our life together. And that entity is beyond each of our individual needs, though it supports our individual needs. It's something beyond that. So it's almost like a child that we create together, something that comes out of the two of us, but is more than the two of us.
And we didn't invent that idea. The idea of the whole being more than the sum of the parts has been around for a long time. And there's writing about you, the three people, or you, me, and the relationship. But our particular take on that is that that relationship has its own power, and that that power allows it to make the lives of the individuals even better.
Dr. Peter Scheris, is this a little bit like getting back to that whole idea of the tandem bicycle, and each person has a role in making the bike work successfully, but if you are in a race competing against others, all of a sudden competing in the race, winning the race, or doing well in the race is the overriding goal that initiates cooperation, and so couple is sort of like the race, at least in terms of a goal? Mm-hmm.
It's the couple goal that can only be achieved with the two of you together. And once that entity is created, whatever problems you have are problems for the couple, not for the individual. So if you're racing and you have a flat tire, it's not like, well, you're in the front, that's your tire, you're having a flat tire, I'm still doing my part. It's that the whole endeavor in some ways won't proceed unless you take it on together. In the same way that we use this example a lot, if we're not communicating well, or if I don't pick my socks up off the floor, it's not just my responsibility. It's up to us, given that we're committed to being together for life, that we figure this out, or it's going to be really annoying trying to deal with picking up the socks for the next 36 years.
Yeah, and like on the tandem bike, it's not always going to be 50-50. Maybe I do better on the downhills than the uphills, and I can balance better. So then on the uphill, let's say Peter would need to give more than 50%, and he's not going to stop and say, well, I've already given my 50% because we want to win the race. So sometimes he'll give more than 50, sometimes I would give more than 50. And that's one of the places, I think, one of the myths that people have is that it's got to be 50-50 or something's wrong. No, it's got to be the both of you agreed upon your common goal, or you're going to be out of the race.
First of all, nobody ever agrees on what 50 is.
But yeah, and this may relate to the first question that we've got coming in on Facebook, or actually comment, I guess. This is from Sarah, who says, relationships work if the woman is willing to work harder at it than the man. Sometimes hard to accept, but true.
Woman?
Well, you know, in some relationships, that may be true. And if that is how it is in your relationship and you're willing to accept that because your husband, your partner is busy working 80 hours a week to keep the family going and you're working more to do the things around the house and taking care of the kids, well, then that, if you can accept that and see that as a common couple goal that you're working towards for your family, then that's fine. However, it's not a universal truth. And that's one of the things that we say about even the four C's. There is no one way for every couple to do the four C's. You need to cooperate to work this out for the needs of your own relationship.
And what makes it work is the agreement, however you agree on that. And that agreement may change over time, but we see a lot of couples in treatment where years down the road, they never renegotiated the agreement, and now someone is very angry or resentful. So part of the notion is, if you're working together as a couple, we often say this, that you are a couple taking on the world, and then couple isn't a thing to be achieved. It's actually a place to come. We say couple isn't a place to get to. It's a place to come from, that we're taking it on as couple. And that may mean somebody works harder at one thing or another, or someone is quiet or not quiet.
So Peter Sherris and Phyllis Scott Sherris, in your new book, Lifelong Love, you talk about these four C's, and you explain with the very first C, commitment, how important commitment to this idea of couple that you capitalize is C. You don't call it a couple. You don't call it the couple. You call it couple. How important commitment is it? And then the second C is cooperation.
Right.
And Peter, did you want to read some from the chapter on cooperation?
Sure. Here's an example, because we try in the book to give very concrete examples of people we know, people we've worked with, people we are. So this was a case
and the names are changed to protect the innocent.
Protect the innocent, yes. Most of us think we're good at cooperating, but few of us actually are. Operating as a team is not natural for the majority of us, and it requires a great deal of coaching and practice. True cooperation as a couple can be difficult, but it can be very rewarding. So here's an example. Dan and Myra, the couple we had met previously in the book, were married. This is their second marriage. And one of the issues they struggled with was Myra's weight. And they agreed that it would be healthy for her to lose weight and that this would be good for their relationship. She'd feel better about herself. Dan would feel more attracted to her. And Myra knew that Dan was supportive, but she felt that he was more critical than helpful. And he seemed to think that it was up to her to lose the weight. And nothing happened for years. And she became resentful and resigned to being overweight, and Dan was convinced that he was destined to have a pudgy wife. Dan and Myra were not really cooperating as a couple. They were waiting for the other person to do something decisive. Dan spoke with some friends, and then Dan had this idea first, but Myra loved it right away. What they would do is take on their weight problem together as a team. They went to a local weight loss clinic and joined together, and each week they were to weigh in and assess their progress. Both of them had some weight to lose, but rather than finding out how each of them had done individually every week, they decided to ask the clinic to reveal only their combined weight loss as a couple. And in that way, they were able to see how their team was doing. And guess what? They lost a lot of weight.
And that exemplifies cooperation?
Yeah, because they actually, as an entity, were able to cooperate to take on the goal they had, which was her weight, even though they both could lose weight. And that's one of the things when people talk about being in a relationship is that they fear that they won't get their own personal needs met, that they have to give something up in the couple. And in this example, you find out that the couple itself can be a force to help you individually get what you want.
And in this example, I remember when we were talking to this couple that it made the wife feel so much less resentful about him wanting her to lose weight because he wanted it for the couple and they were both working on it together.
Clinical therapists Dr. Peter Sherris and Dr. Phyllis Koch Sherris are our guests. Their new book is titled Lifelong Love. So, to you who are listening, when was the last time you were in a long-term relationship? How'd it go? If it was a good relationship, what made it so? If not so good, how come? We're at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. We also accept posts on Facebook where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And we have one here from Lawrence who says, one of the myths little girls are taught is sometimes called the Prince Charming story, that when they grow up, they have to find a man to make them happy. What I've long wondered is if there are fallacies little boys are taught that may also lead to less than successful ideas about relationships when they grow up. Are there any?
There are a lot. And one of them has to do with the ideal woman. And that if you don't find the ideal woman, the thing to do is find another one. And we have this notion of upgrading your wife or marrying someone younger than yourself when she is...
We call that a trophy wife.
Right, or having a trophy wife. And that for men, it seems to be that variety is okay and that that flies in the face of commitment, but that that's okay because men get to do that. Men get to choose and women have to settle.
Well, and there's a lot of role stereotypes that both men and women fit into, and I think men traditionally have had this role stereotype of being the provider. And if the man is not making as much money or loses his job and the wife is making more, often he may feel guilty and the wife may be angry because they're both stuck in that traditional stereotype. So men certainly have that expectation that they have to deal with as well. And women do in the same way. You know, they may be resentful that their husband isn't making more money because that's the way it's supposed to be.
Part of the idea of couple as an entity is that you take on all of those things together, even though you don't all do all of the work, but you come to some agreement. We see this with dads who stay home and raise kids now, that there's a whole world of that that we're just learning about. It's a really powerful and exciting experience, regardless of your gender. And we know a lot of dads who are in that position who absolutely love it. Yeah. It's not like second choice. It's what they choose to do. And sometimes it's the moms who can choose to
do
that.
Yeah, so in actual behavior, those things are beginning to change. But, boy, those concepts, they die hard, and it takes a long time because I've seen it even in cases where they say they're enlightened about this, they still underneath sometimes have this expectation that, you know, maybe it should be different. So we have to watch out for those.
The Prince Charming story that mm-hmm. listener mentioned, is that still a challenge for women? Or have we gotten to the point of liberation where little girls and young women are no longer overwhelmingly believing that if they're going to succeed in life, they've got to find a man to make them happy?
See, I think it's not an accident that all those old movies are coming back again. We're reanimating Sleeping Beauty, and all of those Prince Charmings they're still around and they're in full force. And I think that we still want to have a Prince Charming. We may not want him to be in control, but we still want him to be Prince Charming.
And he doesn't have to be Prince Charming all the time. That one of the beauties of being in a relationship is the playfulness that comes from being able to do different things. And we notice in relationships that are failing, often people are stuck in their current roles. And for them individually, they don't feel very self-expressed or very creative in what they do because they're doing the same thing every day. And we have a lot of exercises we use in treatment with people role reversal mm-hmm. that are in the, you know, just do each other's job for a day.
Role reversal?
Yeah, just do the other person's job for a day. Take
a day
on the weekend.
Is this something that you've done with Phyllis, Peter, that you'd be willing to tell us about?
Oh, it was so long ago, but we wanted to see what it would be like. And we found that it was actually interesting. And because Peter, well, he enjoyed.
It did produce.
What?
It did produce. I was taking on cooking for a while. Oh. And so I just cooked straight for a week. And, you know, Phyllis said I had her at the clam sauce. That was my specialty, spaghetti
and
clam sauce.
Yeah, I thought that he could do a whole lot of other
things. But she figured I could crank out 7 or 8 meals in a row. And I think when we had the bologna à l'orange, was pretty much what ended that.
Now I do most of the cooking, and it's okay.
But we learned a great deal from that, and we had a really great experience, and I don't think we've had bologna since. But
no.
So if anybody's been trying to follow the thread and has been with us since the beginning, you know that our guests are psychologists Peter Sherris and Phyllis Koch-Sherris, author of this new book, Lifelong Love, 4 Steps to Creating and Maintaining an Extraordinary Relationship, and that we've been through the first 2 steps. You said you purposefully put communication number 3. Tell us about that.
If you are committed to being in a relationship and being in a relationship lifelong, which is the first step, and you now are able to cooperate or understand what cooperating is, work together as a team, now communication becomes extremely important. Imagine you're being on a team where no one speaks to one another and you get some sense of what it's like when communication isn't there. But it's now not a weapon. It's an opportunity to facilitate some kind of progress.
But if I'm in a good relationship, aren't I just supposed to know what you're thinking? Aren't I supposed to be read your mind?
Yeah, a lot of people think that, and it's one of the first stumbling blocks. So in the book, we have an exercise called Checking It Out, where you take some of these assumptions, and either one of you could initiate it. Like I can say, I think you might be assuming something. Maybe you want to check that out. Or I might say, I want to check something out because I think I'm assuming something about how you think or feel. And then you give a percentage between 0 and 100%. And even if it's only 10% incorrect, that 10% might be the most important thing you need to find out.
Reading each other's mind is very common in relationships. Sometimes
or
it's
believing
true.
That you're doing
believing
yeah,
that
exactly.
you can,
yes.
Or believing before that you hit, should. You shouldn't have to do that.
Before we hit the break, did you have a section on communication from the book Phyllis Koch-Sherris that you wanted to share with us?
Oh yes, Peter and I talk about that. We have a couple of famous fights, and this one is one of our finest. And we actually have it in the section of the book in communication chapter called Laughter. So it has a happy ending. Other than having sex, one of the best nonverbal things you and your partner can do together is laugh with each other. Seeing the humor in our own behavior and being able to laugh at ourselves are powerful tools for communication. If we take ourselves too seriously, we run the risk of getting stuck. Be careful not to create humor at the expense of your partner, however. The dynamic couple, which is the goal that we all want to achieve, is able to laugh with each other, not at each other. It was most certainly our sense of humor that rescued us from a huge argument many years ago. We were in the second week of a rigorous diet together that required eating only certain foods at specific times. This night it was broccoli, and Peter was very late bringing it home from the grocery store. Phyllis was famished and couldn't reach Peter before the days of cell phones. When he walked in the house 1 hour later, Phyllis was ready to bite his head off instead of the broccoli. He gave her the broccoli to cook, and she was so mad she threw it at him. Peter was shocked and annoyed and picked up the phone book and threw it at her. It fell into the dog bowl. The dog started barking. Soon we were all laughing at ourselves in the situation. We hugged each other and vowed to find another way to deal with our dieting and nutritional goals that was less stressful on our relationship. But it was quite a funny scene that we'll never forget.
Focusing on this hour is titled Lifelong Love, 4 Steps to Creating and Maintaining an Extraordinary Relationship. Its authors are clinical psychologists Peter Sherris and Phyllis Koch-Sherris, and they are our guests. We were just hearing from Billie Holiday claiming that life begins when you are in love. And that reminds me that one of the things that the two of you come back to frequently in your book is a sense that we're surrounded by messages in our culture that is sort of antithetical to building a good relationship. Tell me more about that.
Well, probably the primary one, at least in our country, is this whole notion of individualism and how you really need to get your own needs met, and that's the most important thing. And it flies in the face of being able to have lifelong love, really, because you need to be able to think about something bigger than yourself, and that's what we call couple. So some people even say, well, you know, you can't even get into a relationship unless you have your own stuff all worked out, and that a happy relationship takes a happy person to make it happen. And we say a happy couple can make happy people. So we need to watch out for those cultural stories about how important individualism is and start something new called coupleism. So there are many other cultural stories going on in the background that, you know, we need to pay attention to, like these gender stereotypes we were talking about. They operate often at an unconscious level.
It has us think that there's something wrong if we're not doing the thing that we're supposed to be doing. And part of the playfulness and joy of being in a relationship is getting to invent something new. That we work with couples that a lot of people would say are crazy. Or bizarre in some ways, and they're perfectly happy and wonderful and no one's hurt and they're having an amazing relationship. So part of the joy is when you don't see the way ahead, or the way ahead has to be one person's way and not the other, there's a third alternative, which is what you can invent. If one likes the mountains and the other likes the ocean, look for a third place that neither of you have been to.
Somewhere, someone listening in right now has had what they consider a successful long-term relationship. For a while, it may have been rocky, but now the kinks are pretty much worked out. If you are that person and you'd be willing to tell us what you learned along the way, please do join in at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page. Peter, your wife and colleague, Phyllis Kotscheris, was just saying, sounded to me like if we lived in some different cultures, something other than surrounded by the American ideal of rugged individualism, then relationships might succeed more frequently.
It certainly would be easier for certain things that we say we want in relationships to come to fruition. The kinds of stereotypes we have now often frighten people because they think they're not going to get what they want, and they don't see that there are new ways that they could approach that. And if they could give up their fear for a little bit and throw themselves literally into a relationship with another person, something could be invented that wasn't there before. And that's frightening, but it's also very, very exciting.
Yeah.
Is it something about in America being dedicated to the idea of always having options open, of freedom, and that maybe in some other cultures, in Japan or some Eastern cultures, there is already built into the societal mythology this notion of there being something bigger than self?
Yes, and in the last chapter of the book, Beyond the Four Seas, we talk about a couple that we have known for years in India. Both of them are medical professionals, and it was an arranged marriage. They barely even knew each other, and they grew to love each other, and they've been married for quite a long time, have two children, and have developed a health center that was his dream. But when they got together, she took it on as her dream as well, and now they are working on it as a team. So this was a couple that wasn't necessarily even going to be together if it hadn't been arranged. So there's a lot of possibilities. And when I interviewed them, she says, you know, there are times when he just seems like he needs to be the one who makes the decision, or he needs to be right. And you know what? Sometimes I just let him do it because it's easier for the couple. And so there are lots of ways that you can work it out in your own relationship to make it work. And it seems like, of course, in India, sometimes arranged marriages have their pros and cons. We were going to give a marriage therapy workshop there, and they said, well, we actually don't think we really need it. So it's a little different there than we have it here.
So Dr. Peter Sherris, co-author with Phyllis of your new book, Lifelong Love, Four Steps to Creating and Maintaining an Extraordinary Relationship. We've gone through the first three, which were commitment, cooperation, communication. Tell us about the fourth.
The fourth C has to do with what we're talking about, which is the context and what you think about being in a relationship. And we call it community, because how you learn about relationships usually happens early in life when you see you're in a community with your parents, or what we call vertical community, your parents and grandparents, and how they see relationships, what you learn from them, determines what you're expecting in a relationship. So we often turn to those folks to either get support or sometimes to get evidence that our relationship is not working. And when we work with couples, sometimes when we're done with them, when we send them back into the world doesn't support what they're up to. And they have those vertical communities that can be helpful, or sometimes they have these horizontal communities, which are their friends or people in their generation, where they can begin to see that if you get social support for what you're doing, it can be really great. And you can have friends with other couples. You can operate with other couples in a way that makes it easier rather than harder to be a couple.
So not only can you, but I see a lot of couples where they have very young children, and they are knocking themselves out, especially when they're both working, trying to raise these kids and do it just by themselves. And occasionally they might get help from some extended family. But, you know, we need to start looking at how we can create support within our own, like Peter says, horizontal communities with friends, going to their, now this couple is finding a church, and they have all these possibilities of ways that people support each other in the church.
Is it possible, does it occur to you, Phyllis, in all this work that you and Peter have done, that the way that relationships and couples and families have evolved in our society is different than maybe it was intended to be, or that in other societies where there were extended families, whether we're going back to tribal villages or other places in the world where people were not expected to do it all alone, at best, two people running a household?
Yes, it does seem like evolutionarily that was probably the intention to be.
Is to have many more people supporting each other.
Yes, and living in communities and of extended families supporting each other. And with mobility the way it is now, that doesn't always happen. So doesn't mean that we still don't need it. We just need to find new ways to create that. And I'm always inspired by when we talk about this with couples that we work with, the ideas they come up with and the ways that they are able to make that happen. And we've even created some couples groups, like counseling groups, coaching groups, therapy groups. And it's wonderful to see how the couples come and support each other and come up with ideas for each other and transform what was a problem into something that's fun for them all to work on.
It's not an alien idea. In fact, just about everybody wants to be in a relationship. And what stops them is they get frightened, or they begin to believe that it's not possible for them, or that it's not possible in the world. And that's what really stops them, not the fact that there's no notion of what that relationship could be like.
On page 53 of your book, Lifelong Love, there's a line that I found fascinating among many, but I underlined this one. Believe that a person needs to be emotionally strong and healthy as an individual before she or he can be part of a healthy relationship. It may be surprising to you that we have actually found that the situation can be the reverse. This actually reminds me of Lawrence earlier, who was posting about myths that people learn about relationships. It sounds like what you're saying is one of the myths is, I can't get into a relationship that's going to be successful until I'm completely taken care of myself.
Exactly. And since many people are perfectionists, or very self-critical, they don't ever feel they're ready to do that. And they get to the point of commitment and they say, I'm not willing to do that. I'm not capable of doing that. Or they look around and they say, all of my friends who've tried that have failed at that. And they begin to collect evidence that it's not possible. Then they go for plan B, which is the best they can do, which is finding someone who's attractive or finding a relationship for a short period of time or moving rapidly from one relationship to another.
So, Phyllis, I don't really have to have my stuff all together in order to stand a chance of having a successful relationship?
Fortunately for you, yes.
You don't have to.
You don't have to. You don't have to. That is true. You don't have to have it all
together. So tell me more about the dynamic of that. What's the thinking here?
Well, and we've experienced it with each other. When I'm in the process of trying to do a concert that I'm singing at and I'm feeling overwhelmed, I can go to Peter. Like, we have a section in the last chapter called Couple as an Oasis, and he can help me, you know, stay on track and keep focused and be a support for me in a way that without that, I might just not be able to continue doing some of these things that I love. And so a couple can be an oasis for your individual concerns and individual projects.
And we often love people for their idiosyncrasies or what they don't do particularly well. And we find that either amusing or endearing is the term that we use. And it makes us feel, it's like being a friend. If you never are needed as a friend, you never get to be a friend. So if you don't have someone that you can help complete in your relationship, then you don't get to really be in a relationship.
And you're doing some new work. I want to make sure to mention this because we're running short on time. That has something to do with asking people to take part in a survey, Dr. Peter?
Yeah, we have a national survey we're doing now on couples. And it's if you are interested in taking it, it's an anonymous survey on SurveyMonkey. And it's at surveymonkey.com/S/RPRP, which is the Relationship Potential Research Project.
I have, for one thing, right after the show's over, we're going to make sure that this is posted on our website at WMRA.org. So somebody within 20 minutes from now will be able to find a link to it at WMRA.org, which is a little easier to remember. But is it also possible that somebody, Peter, could just go to surveymonkey.com without all the extra slashes and find the survey?
I think they can.
And, okay. And it'll be posted on our website. Our website is couplepower.com, and we also have a new Facebook page that you can get to through Lifelong Love Book. And you can email us at lifelonglovedocs@gmail.com.
So Phyllis Kotscheris, we started out by talking about how the two of you met and ended up getting married. In the book, you mentioned that you were older than Peter. That you had been married and divorced. Now the two of you have been together for almost 40 years. What does that personal experience give you that you can say to others about wondering if they're ever going to have a successful relationship?
Well, I can tell you that when we have these visions for winning whatever race is up in front of us, that time just flies. And like this book and other projects that we have taken on, that it's wonderful to have a partner that you can be a team with and who supports you in what you're up to. And we know that our commitment is what is going to be there lifelong.
Peter, you had not been married before you met Phyllis. You'd had other relationships, you say, in the book. But certainly as a psychologist who's been working with couples for more than 30 years, you've probably met people who have had unsuccessful relationships in the past, perhaps been divorced, and just have complete sense of doubt about whether they're ever going to be able to have a successful love relationship. In the 30 seconds we've got left, if there's such a person listening right now, what do you want to say to them?
Don't give up. That so many people wind up in a place where they say, until it happened, I never thought it was possible. So keeping that notion that it can happen, and it may very well happen, is very, very important. I have an older brother who was married for the first time at 64 years old, and he thought it would never happen, but he kept that hope alive for himself as a possibility, and now he has what he's always wanted.
And the last line of our book is, lifelong love is a journey, not just a destination. Enjoy the trip.
Final test. Do you remember what the song was that you serenaded Phyllis with on that first date?
I think it was Walking with My Baby Down by the San Francisco Bay.
Really? You have to play that for me sometime.
Our guests have been Dr. Phyllis Kotcharis and Dr. Peter Sharis, psychologists who happen to be married to each other, operate separate clinical practices, but who have together written the new book, Lifelong Love, Four Steps to Creating and Maintaining an Extraordinary Relationship. Phyllis, Peter, thank you so much for making time.
Thank you, and contact us for free advice on our Facebook page.
Thank you for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.